September and October saw back-to-back hurricanes impact Florida's Gulf Coast. Hurricane Helene generated a massive wind field that pushed the highest storm surge observed in living memory into the highly populated Tampa-St. Pete metro area before making landfall as a Cat 4 hurricane along Apalachee Bay on September 26th. Hurricane Milton exploded into a Cat 5 hurricane with maximum sustained winds of 180 miles an hour in the southern Gulf of Mexico before tracking towards the west central Florida coast and making landfall as a Category 3 hurricane on Siesta Key near Sarasota on October 9th. This storm inflicted widespread wind and flood impacts both at the coast and inland. These storms impacted a stretch of coastline that has been very lucky for a long time. The last hurricane to make a direct impact on the region from Tampa-St. Pete through Sarasota and Siesta Key was in 1921, and this storm was preceded by two massive storm surge events that hit in 1848. But none of these storms occurred in living memory, leaving modern-day residents to become very complacent and believe local myths about Native American burial grounds and intercessions protecting the coast from hurricanes. Hey everyone, I'm Hurricane Hal, host of the GeoTrek podcast. GeoTrek explores the world to tell stories about extreme weather and natural disasters not covered by the mainstream media. We focus on the physical processes behind such extreme events, their impacts on society, and what we can do to get out ahead of such events to reduce the loss of life and property. On this episode of the podcast, we're interviewing one of the best qualified professionals to help us unpack the complex physical and social interactions related to hurricane impacts in the Tampa-St. Pete metro area. Dr. Jennifer Collins is a professor in the School of Geosciences at the University of South Florida. Her research focuses on both the physical processes of hurricanes as well as the social impacts, such as behavioral research related to hurricane evacuations. Before we get into the interview with Dr. Collins, I wanted to share context about a few recent hurricanes that have impacted Florida and became part of our conversation. In 2017, Hurricane Irma intensified into a major hurricane that was taking an ominous track for Florida. The storm crossed the state from south to north, impacting communities on both the Atlantic and Gulf Coast, and setting into motion the largest evacuation in Florida's history. Nearly 7 million people evacuated, according to the Florida Association of Counties. 5 years later, in 2022, Hurricane Ian threatened to strike Tampa-St. Pete metro area as a major hurricane before the forecast shifted south. Ian ended up making landfall as a strong Cat 4 hurricane in southwest Florida, inflicting catastrophic damage on Fort Myers Beach and Sanibel Island, but leaving the Tampa-St. Pete area relatively untouched. These two storms, Irma and Ian, show up frequently in the narrative about storm preparation and evacuation along the west central Florida coast. Well, without further introduction, let's get into our conversation with Dr. Jennifer Collins. Jennifer, your community has just survived a big hit from Hurricane Milton, and you were explaining to me the importance of social connections and how it helped you get through the storm.
Yeah, that's right. Our neighborhood really came together at a time of need, which is what I was expected. We're a close-knit community. But I think it's really important for people to really consider those connections and how they can really help you out just in life generally, but particularly during a disaster. Everything during the disaster, my neighbor helped another neighbor put gas in their generator. We were helping each other afterwards clear debris away. They were helping store food for each other, those who had generators. So it was just really great to see that nice, those benefits of a hurricane, right? Sometimes you don't see that side of humanity as much, but I think in a disaster, it really comes out.
Jennifer, you study and research disasters. I mean, what was it like you and your community going through really these two impactful storms within a month?
It's kind of funny, like whenever we go through a hurricane, all my neighbors look at me, well, what's Jen doing? So we'll do what Jen's doing. So in my old house, I actually got a new garage door because I know that's like one of the weakest spot. And so then all my neighbors were getting garage doors. And then they were like, well, if Jen's evacuating, we're evacuating, you know? So I actually do feel a lot of responsibility with that. But for my own reasons, this time we decided to hunker down. We have three dogs, two large dogs that don't travel well. And my kid is grown up now. For Irma, my kid was younger. And it was really important for me to get him out And the minute I left my street for Irma, I just breathed a big sigh of relief, just leaving my street and knowing I was getting my kids to safety. Well, obviously my kid's still important to me, but he's 17 and I know that he can help as well and help himself as well. So we hunkered down and we prepared. We had the shutters on. We had our supplies. I had a lot of supplies well ahead of hurricane season. And then I just built on them during hurricane season. We had a lot of flashlights around. You know, one thing I didn't account for, actually, we charged so many of the backup, what do you call them? Backup power. I don't know what they're called.
Yeah, like the power banks or the power backup power supply.
Yeah, we charged so many of those up. So I thought, oh, I'm all set if I don't have power. And then when it came to using them, I was like, oh, with my type of phone cord, it doesn't work with that. And all of them were not working with that. So luckily, after the storm and some people started getting power back, one day I was able to go to a neighbor's house, charge up my phone, charge up my computer, and then my computer was able to charge my phone after that for the next day too. But yeah, we were without power for 5 days. And one of my biggest concerns in the neighborhood is that without power, our lift station, which handles the sewage, wasn't working. And so sewage was actually backing up out of manholes. And that was a real concern.
So this is right here in your neighborhood. After Milton, the sewage was backing up.
Yes, they were backing up out of manholes in the next street over. So my concern, and I've seen it before, that you can get sewage backing up in your house. And so that would be way worse than losing power. So everyone was really concerned about that. And so we were literally going door to door, telling people and asking people, please, if you've got a generator, please don't start doing your laundry. Please stop putting water down a drain. Don't flush if you don't have to, which sounds gross. But it's what we needed to do to protect our homes and not have to go through even worse of an ordeal.
So in that situation, is it ideal for people just not to use water until that's fixed?
Exactly. So if you can not flush, not put water down the drains, because all that kind of makes the situation worse.
That's interesting too, because you're talking about really a community connected by a problem. So the choices your neighbor makes could actually directly affect sewage backing up into your home, right?
Exactly. So I know that I did my bit, and I actually went to some extremes that I did my bit, and I just put faith that other people in the neighborhood understood what the issue was and that it was a joint issue and that their actions could have serious consequences for us all.
Jennifer, let's talk about the Tampa, St. Pete, Clearwater region. This is an area that we know is vulnerable to hurricanes. In general, it's been very, very lucky for more than 100 years without a direct impact. Researchers have been talking for a long time about what would happen if storms impact the region. This year, we had two different hurricanes, Helene and Milton, both very different, both different impacts, but very impactful on the region. I mean, what was your perspective seeing these storms come in and seeing them play out?
I've been saying for a really long time, it's not if, it's when with Tampa Bay. And every time we've had a near miss, I feel that's been quite detrimental to the Tampa Bay citizens. I feel like they felt that they're protected, and there's even myths around where they think they're protected and they're not. And I knew they weren't. And I kept trying to tell them, no, that's not how it works. This is science. And, you know, our oceans are getting warmer and all other consequences from climate change. And we've had storms in the past, like you said, the 1921 hurricane, impacts from the 1848. We don't remember that. We weren't around. And that's the problem. We don't have that memory of something so devastating. And even those storms, we didn't have the population count that we have today. And if those storms had impacted today, then again, those would have been disasters. So yeah, people seem to have thought that they were immune. Some of my colleagues with Hurricane Helene was it Helene? Was it Helene? I'm just kidding. The one that impacted us here.
Yeah, the first one was Helene. More on the coast and flooding. And
yeah,
the
it was Helene. I'm getting really confused with all
I know it's been a long couple of weeks for y'all. You lost power for a long amount of time.
Honestly, it's a blur. Like, yes, it's Helene. It's such a blur. We've had so much. I mean, Beryl, like, the beginning of the season, and we've had Debbie causing a lot of impact in the big band. Yeah, so my colleague with Helene, she had 8 feet of water in her house, and she was already going through a lot. It was devastating for her, and then Milton came along just to add insult to injury, right? And so I know what we went through with a bit of minor damage, all our food loss. And as exhausting as it is, it's nothing compared to what I know some people have been through. And it does concern me still that I know there's some people that really weren't without power, or if they weren't without power, it wasn't for very long. And so still those people might not really understand. I think you really have to live through it to understand. And the extent to what I've lived through it is still nothing compared to some of my friends and colleagues. I think a lot of us who are fairly well connected in the Tampa Bay region, we know friends and colleagues who've been greatly impacted from this. They've lost their home.
We saw this massive evacuation before Milton. Do you think a lot of that was because of the impact seen from Helene, that people realized these myths like the ancient Indian burial grounds will protect us, we'll never be hit? Was some of that unraveled with Helene, and then did that affect the reaction and the preparedness for Milton?
Absolutely. I think if it wasn't for Helene just happening, we would not have seen those evacuation numbers. I think Helene actually did save a lot of people in Hurricane Milton. So in that respect, it was a good thing. But if you can even say that. But yeah, I mean, because we know even for other hurricanes, we've not seen the type of evacuation that there should have been. People didn't always leave areas where there was mandatory evacuations. So even though Irma was like the largest mass evacuation in history, there's still people that didn't leave in mandatory evacuation zones. So Hurricane Milton, definitely we saw those people leaving, especially along the coastlines. But yeah, we would still see on the news here and there people that stayed. And it was very sad and worrying for them.
When you've talked about all the misses in this area, I suppose you're talking about Irma in 2017, Ian in 2022, even though it hit down by Fort Myers, at one point the tracks, the forecast map brought it closer to Tampa. And then we've seen a lot of hurricanes recently in Apalachee Bay, Hurricane Michael in the Florida Panhandle. It seems like until this year, a lot of these storms were making landfall either well north or well south of Tampa.
That's right. Ian in 2022 was a big one for us. Well, we were preparing for that one. And it was only when it made its turn really at the last minute that saved Tampa Bay. But obviously those communities in Southwest Florida were severely impacted by that. But again, yeah, that adds to people thinking we're protected when no, we're not. We were lucky.
Jennifer, tell us a little bit about your research. I know you get into a lot of the physical processes behind these disasters, but then you've also gotten a lot into the social science. So you're really overlapping both of these really important topics.
Yes. So my original research focused on the physical aspects of hurricanes, why we have active or inactive hurricane seasons. And I still dabble in that a little bit with some of my colleagues, including Phil Klatzbach and many others. But I have moved in, as you said, into looking at the social aspects of hurricanes, which actually for me has been really interesting. And I've really appreciated that aspect of research, kind of interacting with people more and kind of learning their stories and trying to put pieces together to understand why people are evacuating and not evacuating. And being through it myself actually has given me a whole new perspective, even how I write survey questions. You know, I used to have a survey question that says, do you have pets? Well, now I think about it, that question for me is somewhat meaningless, because with Irma, I evacuated because I had 3 small pets who didn't mind traveling. With Milton, I did not evacuate because I had 3 pets and 2 of them were large that don't like traveling. So that question wouldn't actually get at the nuggets of information that you're trying to get at why you didn't really evacuate. It wasn't to do with pets per se. In my case, it was to do with a very individual situation, the number of pets and some that don't handle traveling.
You're touching on a topic here. You mentioned it's not maybe so much if you have pets, but the kind of pets you had. And before you mentioned it's not so much if you have a child or a kid, you know, but it's like, do you have a 10-year-old or a 17-year-old? Very different situation, right? So you're getting into some of the finer details of your family dynamics, your pets, and that I suppose could really affect people's decisions to evacuate, right?
Yeah, absolutely. And so as we soon put out a survey for Hurricane Milton, we will have to have a really thorough look at those survey questions that we had for Ian to see, now we've had this firsthand experience, how that might impact how we actually want to potentially rewrite some of these questions so we can actually get more understanding of people's evacuation behavior.
Have you seen changes if people live in a large urban area versus more rural, things like that? Obviously, big urban area, you're trying to move a lot of people out of harm's way. You get more rural and you have a lot less people and maybe more available routes.
We actually haven't done the urban to rural contrast per se, which would be interesting. My thoughts in general, like you said, urban, you've got a lot of people, a lot of infrastructure, especially downtown Tampa, that area could easily be flooded. So definitely those people should be evacuating. Some of the rural areas are more inland, which we have seen have with Milton actually did get a lot of flooding. And sometimes people don't expect inland flooding. And I think in the last 5 years, even my own PhD student, EJ Chu from Florida Atlantic University, he's studying some of these inland flooding events. And so I think it really is a big topic. We've seen that now. We've seen it through Helene. We've seen it through Milton. And not with Helene, it wasn't just Florida. It's the way through Georgia, South Carolina, and so on. So, you know, just because you're inland doesn't mean that you're protected. And so I do think maybe going back to your question about urban and rural, you know, sometimes rural people can be a little bit poorer. So they might not have some of the resources that some urban people have. But obviously with the urban people, you have a vast range of income, you know, from very, very poor in the urban to a lot richer. So yeah, it'd be definitely interesting to tease that out in the information we collect.
So it sounds like you do social surveys often after a storm. What kind of insights are you trying to get from people who will respond?
We've actually done social surveys before, during, and after a hurricane. And so sometimes before a hurricane season or as it's starting, we look at their intended behavior, what they intend to do. And then we've actually, with Matthew and Irma, for instance, we were actually collecting the data as people were evacuating. And so we were at rest areas in Florida in the hot sun most of the time. And, you know, we actually didn't get funding at first. Some of the reviewers said, no one's going to stop and talk to you. So we actually did a pilot study with Matthew. And actually, yes, a lot of people stopped to talk to us because, one, the roads were congested. Two, they did have to come off and go to the bathroom. One place we were at had food where there was a good half an hour line. And I promised people, hey, if you let me do your survey, I promise you, you'll be done before you get to the front of the line. Plus, it will take your mind off like just waiting and the frustration of waiting for food.
What are some of the main things you learn from interviewing actual evacuees during an evacuation?
Some of them didn't have a plan, and that was really concerning. So they were on the road heading, for instance, in Irma, they were heading north out of the state and they didn't have a plan. They didn't know where they were going to. They were asking us where they could go to. And I knew a lot of the hotels in Georgia and Alabama were already full up. So I was really concerned for them without a plan. Some of them, a lot of them were bringing pets with them. We saw everything from dogs to parrots. It was very sad. One time we saw a dog loose in the rest area and heading towards the interstate. And I don't know if someone just left it or if how they forgot about it, I'm not sure, but we were able to bring back the dog, and someone actually ended up adopting it. So it was a good story at the end of it. But yeah, people don't have a plan. People are having pets loose. People don't have the gas necessarily to get them to where they need to be. And, you know, we've seen in the Tampa Bay region this past week, the inability to get gas. There was certainly supply coming in, but there were so many people that needed it. So the lines were just horrendous.
So from studying evacuations, what advice would you give if people are in a disaster prone area, if they're trying to say, okay, I want to have a plan. I don't want to be one of these people that are running out of gas or just aimlessly driving. What advice would you give?
Well, with regards to gas, you can get gas tanks and stock that up, right, ahead of the season. But, you know, one of my research areas focused on social connections. And that was, you know, those connections you have. We looked at the density, diversity, dependability of people's social connections. And so the advice I would have is, ahead of the hurricane season, have that plan. Think about, if I needed to evacuate, where could I go? Who would take me in? You know, who would be able to lend me money to get gas? You know, think about all those connections. And, you know, regardless of the hurricane season, get to know your neighbors, because if you hunker down, you can really help each other out, whether it's putting shutters on or something else. I know for myself, our shutter people let us down before the hurricane, and then they said they were coming and they let us down again. And then they literally was arriving the morning of the hurricane.
So, and these are people that are hired to come out and put up the hurricane shutters.
Correct. And so a lot of people got business, but they got a lot of business. And so I think they were letting people down, unfortunately, because they took on too much commitment. And one person was certainly price gouging. They wanted $3,000 to put up hurricane shutters.
My goodness. So you see some of that as well. So there's a lot of things preparing your home. You're thinking about evacuation. We've talked about just the stress of the storm in general. It's not just the day of the storm. It's often before, during, and after, right?
That's right. So it can be very stressful. And when you think about other things you have going on, if the storm wasn't going there, for instance, my kid is going through college applications and there's deadlines right around the time of this hurricane. Now, some schools in Florida have extended those deadlines, but schools up north out of the impacted region probably have not extended their deadlines. And so kids here are greatly being impacted in a number of ways, from teenage kids like my son and college applications to younger kids who get very scared with the storm.
Moving forward, could you see people making different decisions about where they're going to live, maybe how they're going to prepare their homes, just in this region now getting two hits in the last month? How do you see this playing out, maybe, in how people make decisions?
Well, with a lot of inland flooding, I've actually seen some calls locally on Facebook to try and prevent these new developments being built, because these new developments are taking away some of the wetlands and areas that we need that would have helped with the flooding. So I think there's calls for that. I think people do need to seriously think about moving to coastal areas. Sure, it's pretty to see the ocean, but do you really want to go through this and have 8 feet of water in your home? That's like above a height of you, and even some people have 12 foot in their home. That's like two of you on top of each other. So you don't want to go through that. So, you know, maybe go to the ocean for a day trip. I don't know that I would want to live right by the ocean with the potential for the storm surge.
We have a few more insights here from Jennifer. You brought up that it's not just your pets and not just your kids, but also maybe the type of home you live in could affect your decision to evacuate or stay behind.
That's right. So with Irma, when I left, like I said, my kid was younger, so I did have that big sigh of relief leaving the neighborhood, knowing my kid, I was getting him to safety. But at the same time, the house I had, it was a nice house, but it was like my starter house, and I was going to move anyway. And obviously, I did not want to come back to damage or anything. But the difference between then and now with Hurricane Milton, I've moved into a house which is everything I've saved up for. And so I really wanted to be here to mitigate any potential damages from flooding or wind, so that, you know, we could look after this really nice home. So I think that's a big difference for me in some of my evacuation decisions. Now, I do want to stress I was not in a surge zone. I wasn't where there was a mandatory evacuation. That I would have had a very different mindset in deciding to evacuate. But because I wasn't, I did want to mitigate damages in this nicer home.
Right. And so that's a good point. You're in this area where there were going to be some inland flood impacts. There were going to be some wind impacts, but then you took into account, it sounds like, the weather, but also a little, some information about your property and how available you are to mitigate that if you did have damage, right?
Exactly. So if we had got more rain, I mean, you saw the images of how much rain we did get. But if we got even a couple of inches more, we might have got more flooding into the house. And so I wanted to be here to mitigate what I could.
That makes a lot of sense, because you're thinking like, okay, during and after the storm, you maybe want to be in your home in case there's damage to the roof or there's water in the home or something like that. Really interesting insights.
Exactly. Yes. Mitigate as much as you can. But again, if you are in a mandatory evacuation zone, your life is way more important.
Jennifer, you've been talking about this conference that you're helping to organize that's touching on a lot of these really important topics related to hurricanes and disasters.
That's right. It's called the Tropical Cyclone Risk in a Changing Climate, and we're holding it in Clearwater in 2025, the end of May, beginning of June, and we're bringing together scientists, engineers, those from reinsurance, and other people that are stakeholders locally as well. So we'll have really in-depth discussions during this conference, finding the latest state of the research, understanding next steps. We're going to have a big focus on this 2024 hurricane season, and also a focus on communication as well. I think that's very important.
Thanks so much, Jennifer, for taking time to come on the GeoTrek podcast to share your expertise and experience living through Hurricanes Helene and Milton. I wanted to share three take-home points I got from this conversation with Jennifer. The first thing that stood out to me from our conversation was the importance of social connections. We heard this theme run throughout the interview. Jennifer made compelling points about the importance of social connections, whether you evacuate for a hurricane or stay behind. She reflected on conversations with Hurricane Irma evacuees back in 2017 who did not have an evacuation plan or even know where they were going. And she mentioned a big part of evacuation planning is relying on social connections. She also talked about the importance of social connections for those that stay behind during a hurricane. She mentioned that she stayed home during Hurricane Milton, and this enabled her to communicate with her neighborhood about the importance of not using water as a community so sewage would not back up into their homes. This was an excellent example of a neighborhood needing to work together and cooperate on a shared threat that could have been a major problem. Her neighborhood mitigated this problem together because they have such a tight community. So this concept of forming social connections is an important theme that we've covered throughout this season of the GeoTrek podcast. It was one of the first pieces of advice that meteorologist Alan Seals gave on GeoTrek podcast number 96, which opened up this hurricane season. The second point I got from this interview was the importance of having a disaster plan. For coastal residents in hurricane-prone areas, this may take the form of an evacuation plan. Jennifer's story about evacuees not knowing their final destination was difficult to hear. We could just picture what an unpleasant situation this would have been for such evacuees. Keep in mind, during the biggest evacuations, hotels can be booked for hundreds of miles. If you want to get out of harm's way and you don't want to sleep on a cot in a public shelter, you may need to rely on friends or family away from the disaster zone. Keeping social connections with people inland and communicating with them before the hurricane season starts can be a great first step at setting you up for evacuation success. I wanted to dig a little deeper on this topic and share that from my perspective, many of these preseason evacuation plans do not need to focus on details, but rather just form a big picture. It's not possible to even plan every detail for a storm that doesn't even exist yet. So here's a quick example. Imagine a young family with four kids between the ages of 3 and 11 lives along the coast in a hurricane-prone area. Every year, this family's favorite uncle and aunt come to the coast to see their nieces and nephews. They've all decided it's easier for two people to travel to the coast than for six people to travel inland. So on one given April, the uncle and aunt receive a call from the coast asking if the family of 6 on the coast could use them as an evacuation location if necessary during hurricane season. After all, Uncle Joe has had some health issues in recent years, and we're not so sure if he'd be up for the company. The Inland family assures the Coastal family they can absolutely use them as an evacuation location and thanks them for reaching out about this because they were just going to sell the bunk beds in a garage sale because the Coastal family hasn't come inland for more than 4 years. The bunk beds stay and the Coastal family is assured they have a place to stay if need be during evacuation. This is the kind of planning we're talking about when it comes to preseason evacuation planning. Residents who live in coastal flood zones should think through details of what their family needs and what their options are, forming a big picture before hurricane season even arrives. As Jennifer mentioned, this plan will change over time depending on the size of the family, the ages of family members, and other characteristics like the number and the age of the pets. The third take-home point I got from this podcast was the importance of checking all of our backup technology, including wires, plugs, and connections. Jennifer mentioned that her family invested in battery backups for their devices, but the connection cables were not adaptable and did not work to connect the batteries to their devices. So I can so much relate to this story because I had a very similar experience during Hurricane Beryl in July in Texas. Our family had a bi-fuel generator that could run off propane or natural gas. We liked having the option to run the generator off of natural gas as propane gets used up quickly and is hard to resupply after a hurricane. Well, it turns out that we did not have the right hose to hook the generator up to the natural gas, and local hardware stores were either closed or sold out of these hoses in the days after the storm when the power was out. So we basically were stuck in a situation where we didn't have the technology backup that we thought we did because we did not test the hoses. So piece of advice, whether you're setting up a generator for electricity backup or a power bank to charge phones or a laptop, make sure you check those cables and hoses before the disaster hits instead of during or afterwards. Jennifer, thank you so much for taking time to come on the GeoTrek podcast. Your insights were profound and you really helped us think about not only the impacts of these two hurricanes on Florida, but some deeper issues embedded in social science related to storm preparation and evacuation. We look forward to seeing you at the 2025 Symposium on Hurricane Risk in a Changing Climate in Clearwater, Florida, next May. To our listeners, thank you so much for your support and for coming along with us to Florida to learn more about Hurricanes Helene and Milton. If you like this episode, you'll love the next one when we go on the ground to interview survivors of these hurricanes who live in the coastal zone and experience not only wind and flood impacts, but massive amounts of sand that push ashore during the coastal floods. Until then, I'm your host, Hurricane Hal, signing off until the next episode of the GeoTrek podcast.